And welcome to Lambda Weekly. No, not our usual opening song. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the 3 minutes early Patty Fink. Josh is on the board, and we're just going to talk a little bit of news today. The big gay news this week was, oh my God, Barry Manilow came out. Could you believe it when you heard the news?
It's a miracle.
It is a miracle. Why are you not? Okay.
I'm a little surprised. Why is this news? We talked about this a year ago.
When he got married?
When he got married.
It was in the paper. Well, but maybe some people didn't realize that when he married his husband that he was also gay.
Okay.
It's
like that questionable coming out, like Jodie Foster's. Right, did she really come out?
Right. You know? Well, but, you know, with Barry Manilow, that train left the station in 1971 when he was performing at the Continental Baths as Bette Midler's piano player.
Exactly.
Everybody who worked for Bette Midler for 25 years was gay. Everybody.
And Aaron texted me, she goes, who didn't know?
Well, okay.
Well, apparently his fan base did not, which is not mostly LGBT.
Seriously?
Yeah.
But they're not stupid.
Okay, here's my take on it. It's not that I partially blame this on the way the media explained it. When, you know, when somebody else comes out and nobody knew, that's coming out. Barry Manilow discussed being gay for the first time in his career, discussed publicly that he was gay. That's the only way you can really put it. Like you said, Laurent, it was in the paper last year married.
We talked about it at length right here. So
to his husband, who he's been with for 40 years.
Yeah.
So it's maybe it's just wording, but he didn't just come out. Ridiculous.
Exactly. Now, he did say the reason why he finally came out, or why he never came out, is because he didn't want to disappoint his fans, his fan base.
Disappoint?
Yeah. That's what he said. That's a direct quote from him. But, you know, here's what I always go back to.
And again, I think that's generational.
It is. But I, when you go, but it comes to celebrities like him, it's like, do you really think that they thought you were straight?
That's what I was saying. Are they stupid?
And I didn't want to answer that. I don't want to insult any Barry Manilow fans out there. But, you know, I mean, he's not the only one. There's some other celebrities right now, like
Johnny Mathis? Yeah, we all think he's straight.
No, Johnny Mathis has been out for years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's been out.
He's been out years. Like Queen Latifah. Really?
She walks this really crazy line.
And it's like, do you really think anybody thinks you're straight? And she just refuses to answer either way. So I don't know.
Do you think that's the black community, though, that she feels like maybe, because there's a strong, homophobia.
Or whether she's afraid she won't get jobs. People think that.
You know, that's a hard question to answer because, well, you know, Queen Latifah started out as a rapper. She hasn't been in the rap industry for a year. She's pretty much known now as an actress, you know, an A-list celebrity actress. So I don't think that would stop her from getting parts. Now, if she was still, you know, involved in, you know, very much in the hip-hop rap game, I would think maybe that's why she hasn't come out. But I don't know now.
Well, but it's not a matter of knowing that somebody is gay or lesbian. Sometimes I think with the discrimination, it's do they talk about it or don't talk about it, which is a step above, ooh, if anybody knows that you're gay, we're not going to hire you anymore. It's, oh yeah, that one is always talking about it. Oh, this one, she doesn't talk about it, so she's still safe to hire. And I wonder if there's some of that.
I don't know. I mean, same thing with, what's his name, for Will and Grace, who took forever to come out. Sean Hayes.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Sean, did you really think anybody thought you were straight? Interesting thing about him is, you know, he got a lot of flack for not coming out, but he was already out when Will and Grace started. He did 2 independent gay films.
Yeah, Billy's Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then he went back in the closet. So that was kind of strange.
Well, another one then would be Donna Brazile.
Yes.
She was out and about.
Very much so.
You know, she was out in the Washington, D.C. LGBT community. Like, you know, there were mentions of her in The Blade and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when she became more prominent and eventually became the first woman to be a campaign manager for a national campaign, which was for Al Gore when he ran for president, and the first African-American woman to be a campaign manager for a presidential candidate. She's been in the closet.
Well, another one in that category is our former Secretary of State, the second one under George Bush. I wouldn't mention Cornelia's name, but everybody at Stanford knew that she was gay. She was living with her girlfriend, and then all of a sudden went to Washington with George Bush as his national security advisor, and she wasn't gay anymore either. But she's never said anything, and so I'd never mention her name.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't want to ask. We won't.
Right. But, you know, it goes back to the thing. So because these public figures have not proclaimed that they are LGBT,
Or made it clear.
Do we not refer to them as such?
I wouldn't mention Ms. Rice's name as being.
And you know, going back to the old Jodie Foster standard, you know, it's like, well, she's never said it. So
she's never said those words.
I'm gay. And or you know, you don't even have to say those words, but acknowledge that you have a same sex partner.
With Barry Manilow, he acknowledged he was marrying
his
manager of 40 years.
Yeah.
But this a year later, he's first announcing that he's gay. We got it when you married your husband.
Because we're not stupid.
The only case of straight people marrying each other was on Boston Legal when William Shatner married James Spader because James Spader's character wanted to care for him because he was developing Alzheimer's. That's the climax of the show. Uh-huh. But that's the only example of it that I can think of.
Has there been any celebrity outings or self-outings in the past 10 or so years that has surprised anyone?
I have one. Okay.
And I forgot his name, Shepard. The Fox.
Chef Shepard?
Yeah.
That didn't surprise me.
I don't watch him that often. I mean, hardly at all. I knew who he was, so I didn't watch.
He's been pretty outspoken.
And he has. But that one surprised me. I'm like, I had no idea. Other than that, I can't think of too many that I'm like, I didn't think so.
So when Josh here in our studio came out, it didn't surprise you?
He came out?
I didn't know that he was ever in. Good for Barry.
You know, good for him. But what I really say, I'm really not making fun of his coming out. I'm making fun of how the media handled it.
Right.
Because he didn't come out. He spoke about being gay publicly for the first time. There's a huge difference between those two things.
You know who else has never come out? And when I think of Barry Manilow, I think of this person too. Richard Simmons.
You're right. He never has.
He
never has.
Wow.
I met him once. At Neiman Marcus downtown when I was repping a clothing line. The sign in the men's department said David Taffet and Richard Simmons, and I said to him, I got top billing. He just laughed. He's the nicest person.
He seems like
he was the nicest person. What a character.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he doesn't need to come out.
Did he have red and white striped shorts? Super short?
I think they were blue and white.
Okay.
But
who's the more the most obvious? Barry Manilow, Richard Simmons?
Richard Simmons.
Or Liberace?
No, Richard Simmons.
Richard Simmons.
And Liberace's one who never really publicly came.
He never really did.
So.
Right.
So.
Anyway.
Interesting.
While we're talking dirt, Bill O'Reilly. Okay,
that's some dirt.
That's some serious.
Here's what I like. Okay, he lost 50 advertisers on a show.
And counting.
So far.
Yeah, so far.
Well, that's basically all of them. I keep thinking of Dr. Laura. Remember her? You forgotten? When several of us were calling all of her advertisers, and she lost most of them, and that was the end of her show. Fox seems to be sticking with him for now, but
I think they will stick with him throughout it all.
He gets the ratings, but if he's not making the money to support his multi-million dollar salary, and they keep having to pay out, they paid $13 million, apparently, to employees and guests, is what I've read. The employees part of it, I almost get that. I'm not condoning it. I'm saying I get it because, you know, here's somebody who works for you, somebody who feels like they're in a perilous position. But guests, you know, we've done this show now how many years? I've never even asked somebody who's been a guest out, like, would you like to go out to dinner? You know, several times some of us have, you know, gone for lunch as a group.
Right.
But I can't imagine.
Well, that would be okay if you did. But
well, I know it would be
asking him to come to your hotel room.
But I mean,
prior to the interview
of a guest on the show, I can't even imagine.
And that just speaks to me about the opportunity for an employee, someone you see every day. The opportunities to be sexually harassed in the workplace are just enormous. I mean, as a woman, I'm here to say that happens all the time. It happens way more than men wish to acknowledge. But as a guest, when do you have? When you exercise that opportunity? It's like okay, 10 opportunities, and you're going to cram a sexual harassment episode into, you know, one out of 10 or 1 out of 2 or 1 out of, you know. That just seems insane to me.
When do you have time?
Then you're really a sexual harasser if you can hit on a guest.
Seriously, Patty, when do you have time? We're preparing the show or racing to the show. One or the other. And then afterwards, there are so many people around. I mean, the guest is not alone with the host. Yeah. I just don't even get that one. Okay. Here's what's bothering me, and I don't know if it should. He has a new book out called Old School, and what it's about are good moral values.
Oh, jeez.
It's not just being advertised on Fox News. It's being advertised on non-Fox television stations.
That's insane.
I'm kind of on that one. Should CBS, where I saw it, have more morals than to advertise this book, or he hasn't been convicted of any crimes, so it's not like it's illegal, or I mean, it still wouldn't be illegal, but it's questionably moral whether or not they're accepting advertising money for this book. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I kind of think they need to continue advertising it. It just underscores how insanely hypocritical this whole situation is.
But on the other side, here's how it's different from the Dr. Laura situation. We as a community had to instigate and get those advertisers pulled from her show. These advertisers with Bill O'Reilly's show have stepped away on their own.
Oh, I think the first ones, there was probably a concerted effort and a number of calls to those advertisers threatening boycotts, threatening other kinds of things.
I don't know. The very first one to pull was Mercedes-Benz. I mean, from jump. I mean, it seems like as soon as the news broke, they broke. So I don't know how many calls were they got, and everybody else followed suit. That was big on Mercedes-Benz's part. So I think that's, you know, again, a credit to them for doing the right thing.
And I'm not taking that away from them. I'm just saying, I just have a feeling there were some calls to advertisers and they weren't hearing good things. Whether it was a concerted effort or just random people calling, really? You're advertising on that show? So right now, and just imagine the situation, being able to get through a radio show or TV show without advertisers. Can you imagine our doing that here at KNON without?
I don't know how we do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in this, let's talk a little bit about. I had a kind of back and forth on this week with somebody on Facebook, or several people on Facebook, about they're comparing this to Bill Cosby, who's also, you know, under. He's actually under criminal investigation. He has a court date coming up. And they're saying that there's a double standard because Bill O'Reilly's show has not been pulled. And when the charges came up for Bill Cosby, even though he didn't have a current show, his, you know, the show that he's best known for, the Cosby Show, that was pulled from the air. I mean, I kind of see what they're going for, but I think I have to, you know, I wasn't defending Bill O'Reilly at all. But we're talking two separate, totally different things. Bill O'Reilly got accused of sexual harassment. Bill Cosby is getting charged with rape. Those are two different things.
And I think there's a different kind of landscape for Bill O'Reilly. Let's not forget that Roger Ailes got booted from his own network over sexual harassment, and lots of it.
Lots of it, apparently.
So, you know, there's obviously a different standard also at Fox than there is at other networks. So, you know, there's that.
I want to go back to accepting the advertising for this book. The only thing that it's doing that's good is a show like ours is pointing out how hypocritical it is that he just wrote a book about morals, and he has settled five lawsuits with women, costing $13 million.
This is not unlike Bill Bennett, though, who was the Secretary of Education under, I believe, Reagan, who, you know, gambled away like his family's fortune or something, and then he's writing books on morality. You know, I mean, it's the hypocrisy is stark.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I don't see Bill O'Reilly going anywhere. Even if they temporarily suspend his show, he's going to be there.
I don't know.
Not with that.
I hope that I am so wrong.
But look how many people, they're successful people, really successful people have jumped ship. Megyn Kelly jumped ship. Greta Van Susteren jumped ship.
True.
You know, they've got Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. You know, come on. Yeah. Sean is up a certain person's derriere. Can't get any deeper embedded,
right?
You know, and then there's Bill O'Reilly.
We'll need to wrap up.
We do need to wrap up. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We have just one ad from one of our multi-million-dollar advertisers, and we'll be right back with more Lambda Weekly.
Right, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink. We're just talking a little bit of news today.
My last point I was going to make, one of the reasons why I don't see Bill O'Reilly, and we can move on after this with Bill O'Reilly, is I'm thinking of him like Don Imus, you know, who got suspended. He got fired. It was just a matter of time, man. He was right back on the air. He had advertisers that pulled, too. When the dust settled, he was barred back, and the advertisers came back.
And the other part of it is O'Reilly is Fox's number one ratings.
Absolutely.
Rapper,
absolutely. So we're talking about employment, sexual harassment. Let's talk about the big employment news this week.
It was huge.
Huge. The federal...
This is Bigley.
This is Bigley. For the first time, a federal appeals court or federal court has said that sexual orientation are protected in workplace discrimination under existing law.
Under the Civil Rights Act.
That's huge. 1964. 1964, that's huge. Now, this might get appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. We'll see. But
and speaking of Supreme Court, Gorsuch was approved this week. And
oh, my God. I'm so surprised.
I know. I am, too. I was shocked that that went through.
The fortunate thing, in my view, is that it's just a one-for-one on Scalia. Yeah.
I'm just guessing how he would vote on this should it come to the Supreme Court. Just guessing he might not be in favor.
Yeah. So, you know, again, and we mention it on the show all the time that we do not have workplace protections for LGBT people on a national level and definitely not here on the state level. So this is why it's so big. they looked to a decision. This was the Seventh Circuit Court. They looked at a prior decision from the Supreme Court. Uncle versus Sundowner, in which they ruled that sexual harassment did include same-sex sexual harassment. So that was interesting.
It seems to me should be obvious. Sexual harassment is sexual harassment.
Yeah, right.
And the only reason that earlier cases didn't include was because it was written by brilliant minds that didn't even understand
what sexual harassment.
What sexual harassment of one man against another could possibly even look like.
Right.
So you know, but of course sexual harassment is sexual harassment, whether you're a man, whether you're right. a woman. I think they were also, in their minds, trying to not embarrass the man being harassed because, ooh, that assumes that he's gay. How embarrassing.
Right. Or he's a weakling.
Or he's weak. Or
not much of a man.
And when I say gay, I mean all of those stereotypes.
Yeah,
all
exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, silly idea that harassment is when a man harasses a woman, or the idea that a woman could possibly harass a man. It has to do with
right.
the position of power.
About that.
Mm-hmm. Is there?
With yeah. Michael, with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore.
Yeah,
disclosure.
That's right.
Who knew that that could happen?
Right, right.
Because, you know, just can't imagine. So, I mean, it's a logical extension. But when it comes right down to it, what never made sense to me was heterosexual, homosexual, those are all sexual, and what people are thinking is sex. And if you're discriminating against somebody, it has to do with your perception of what that person does sexually, because other than that, if you're employing somebody for a particular job, what they do at home sexually has nothing to do with what you do in the office. Look at Patty.
But I think there's a bigger context here for saying discrimination based on sex, as one might find in the Civil Rights Act. There's a perception of gender role here that I think is what the court may be pointing to. And that's where perhaps a workplace may see a gay man as less than a man and more like a woman
mm-hmm.
in some people's screwed up stereotypes mm-hmm. of gay people, and a gay woman as not really a woman
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
as more like a man. And so it's all based on, I don't know how you get away from it, it's all based upon gender and sex. You know, and while we can see those as two different concepts and social constructs, it's all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's yes. a general. It's just like I think mm-hmm. a lot of the SB6 stuff is based upon gender role, because you notice Patrick is focused solely on
women.
Men going into mm-hmm. women's restrooms. He doesn't care about little boys or
right.
men when a woman would walk in, because, you know, a woman's lesser than.
Right, exactly.
A woman's not a threat.
Right.
So, that, I mean, you can just see that the gender role stereotyping is just enormous among this backward Neanderthal mindset.
You know, I'd love to know what discussions go on in his home. You just used my bathroom, and that's a men's bathroom.
Right, right. Well, and I've had those arguments.
Or do they share that bathroom at home?
And I've had those arguments, like on Twitter, with staunch backers of this SB6 and of what's her name, Burton's bill.
Connie Burton,
where teachers have to tell everything. Teachers and staff have to tell everything about the kid, and be, you know, like tattletalers, but basically,
yeah.
You know, and his this guy's. Point of view was that children have no rights to privacy. And I'm like, so you remove the door on your bathroom in your
exactly.
house?
Exactly.
I mean, let's talk about this, because kids do have rights.
They do.
You know, if CPS learned that you had no door on your bathroom and you forced your kids to use the bathroom in front of the entire family
right.
or shower, that would be a problem, because kids do have rights.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, it's about 2 months ago, Congregation Beth El Bana hosted one of the breakout groups for B'nai B'rith youth when they were here. They had a conference here, about 4,000 kids were at it, and Beth El Bana did the gay part. And it was a wonderful panel that they put together for the synagogue. They put together, it was the executive director of Trevor Project, producer and director of Transparent, and a number of other people. Anyway, so first panel discussion, then breakouts into small groups. The Trevor Project group, these are Jewish kids too, where, you know, you think generally more liberal homes. The Trevor Project group got more kids attending than any other group, And afterwards, they came back to talk about some of their experiences. These kids had access to the Trevor Project. Are you saying a kid has no right to privacy and therefore shouldn't call a suicide hotline if they need it?
See, right? That's crazy. Right. That's what these, you know, that's what these, and they're mostly old white guys.
And, you know, and when I said to the group, as we were saying goodbye, I just said to the group, and remember, if you ever need to call anybody, Congregation Beth El Bana here in Dallas is here for you. I had three girls come up to me and give me a hug. Why? Wow. Because they just needed that mm-hmm. little bit of, you're okay. Mm-hmm. Of course kids need some privacy. You know, these are kids that could have committed suicide. Would that have been better?
Right.
And telling the parent when a kid has gone to a counselor, I mean...
And what took place, what the conversation was.
Isn't there patient
I thought there was just confidentiality, yeah. I'm not an attorney, but I thought that's what the case was.
I thought so, too.
Me, too.
Yeah. I thought so. I mean, this law or bill stinks. It will be declared unconstitutional if it passes, which it will in the Senate, and hopefully we'll get just as buried as SB6 does in the House. By the way, the SB6 bill got buried exactly in the committee that Eric Johnson told us it would. The Republican chairman of that committee in the House hates that bill, and Helen Giddings of Dallas, who's a Democrat, is the vice chairman of that committee. She hates that bill, and this bill will go into that committee as well.
Good.
So,
good.
Yeah.
Good.
That's a good thing.
News?
Before we go to the news, you were just in Canada for how
yes.
long? A week and a half?
About 10 days.
Yeah.
We did, it was my birthday and it was our anniversary, 16 years together. Aaron's been doing it 16/1. So our one is that we've been officially married for a year. But we went to Toronto and we took the train via rail to Vancouver. So we went the length across Canada's main provinces.
Wow.
And we had extra days on either end.
People who are from Prince Edward Island, and I have a good friend who's from Prince Edward, he would disagree with you, but
yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. And in fact, we met so many incredibly wonderful people on the train, one of whom was the travel writer for the Washington Post. And I was just texting with her, actually. She was there doing a piece on that's Canada's 150th, and yet no one in the country knew the word sesquicentennial. We were saying, "Oh, it's Canada's sesquicentennial," and they're like, "Huh?"
Hey.
But we were everywhere we were going in our entire trip. We saw rainbow flags everywhere, which I think is a great a tribute to Gilbert Baker, who died this past week. He was 65, and he was the one who created the rainbow flag. Mm-hmm. But we went to Church Wellesley in Toronto, which is the LGBT area. And as I was telling Ron, it's Toronto, the city where the churches are on Queen Street and the queens are on Church Street. But they have like sidewalks that are the rainbow flag, which I'd love to do here in Cedar Springs.
I would too.
We took a lot of photos of that. They had that oldest bookstore, LGBT bookstore, in the world.
Oh, wow.
In Toronto. And
because there aren't any other LGBT bookstores left anywhere else.
Probably. And they had a statue of this this guy from the 1700s who helped settle Canada and such, who was a gay man.
Oh, wow.
And out.
And opened the first gay bar in Canada.
Probably.
So did you all like Vancouver?
Oh, loved Vancouver.
Yeah.
Well, on our trek there, though, we stopped in Jasper, which is right in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. It was gorgeous. But as we're pulling in, the first thing we see along the street that parallels the tracks were rainbow flags on all the light posts. And they had just finished Pride in March. And one of the...
Why do they do Pride in March?
I'm not sure. We never really found that out, but that's what they do annually. And the guy who was basically the top guy from Via Rail on our train said that he and his son had just spent the week there, mm-hmm. kind of wink, wink. And then we were like, yeah. And so there were great photos. We got some really great photos of the really bright colors of the rainbow flag against the Rocky Mountains with snow. And
oh, awesome.
It's just gorgeous. And then we get to Vancouver, and I think the whole city's gay.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty gay when we were out there.
It was everywhere.
It was everywhere.
And there actually are straight people there.
Yeah, there are.
And they're just so stinking nice.
Yes.
They really are, like the whole city. And their gay neighborhood in Vancouver, and I forgot what it's called, but it's enormous.
It's on Davie Street.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, it just goes for blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks.
They have the community center.
So yeah, if you ever go to Canada, I would highly recommend going to Vancouver. I haven't been to Toronto yet.
Toronto kind of reminded us of New York City. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it's like a big city, and it's bustling, and it's active, and it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the vibe of it kind of reminded us of New York City. Vancouver, to me, was more like San Francisco.
Yeah.
It had a really laid-back vibe about it. There's recycling everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, four things you can recycle on one block. You know, that kind of thing.
Starbucks on every corner.
I
love that.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I was like, wow.
And we had such a good time.
And my favorite cities in Canada are Montreal and Quebec City. I love French Canada. It's just you go right over the New York border and you feel like you're in another country. I mean, you are in another country, but you don't feel like you're in another country in most of Canada. It just feels very European, and I just love it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Great.
Welcome back, and
thanks.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
16, 17 years?
16.
16. Awesome.
Yeah, 2001.
Wow.
We got together, so.
Okay,
so. Chugging along. And I highly recommend the train. Mm-hmm. We spent 5 days on a train. And we didn't get our land legs back until after we were in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing, cause especially in the shower. But you get used to that kind of rocking.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny. We went in Toronto, the doorman for our hotels, we told him what we were doing, and we were right across the street from the train station. And he says, oh, don't fall asleep, because except Saskatchewan. You can fall asleep in Saskatchewan. And we went to exchange our voucher from the travel agent to get our Via Rail ticket. And the agent said, we told her what he had said. And she says, yeah, that's pretty true. And for much of Ontario as well. So we went.
Because it's just flat.
Yeah. And by the time we got to Winnipeg, and we got to do three or four hours in Winnipeg, which was unheard of. We were usually 20, 30 minutes at every stop. We went out in the Human Rights Museum.
I was in Winnipeg a couple of summers ago, it was just about to open.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? It was closed. We were there on a Monday. It was the one day they're closed.
Yeah.
We so wanted to be able to go there. But we did eat breakfast in a little place that had where a group came in and sat at the table across from us in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And this girl had a Bucky's hat on. So we had that little conversation. but, you know, it was really interesting, and we kept getting pulled over because passengers are not the priority. Freight is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to pull over constantly to, you know, to let the freight go by. So Aaron asked one of the staff, do you have like a paper copy of the schedule? And she says, oh, no, we don't give that to passengers anymore because it stresses them out. Because nothing was on time at all. At all.
Wow.
And the only reason we were really stopping when we did was because the engineers can't drive the train or operate the train more than 10 hours. Mm-hmm. In some cases, I guess 12 hours, 10 to 12 hours. But they have to literally stop. I said, so what happens if we wait and do these wait things and then he runs out of time and we're not at a station? You know, they said, well, they stop. And they're like, helicopter out another engineer because it's by law, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that must drive the passengers crazy. And she goes, oh, no, we've worn you down by then so much by pulling over to wait for freight trains that you don't even notice.
You don't notice.
It was great.
We need to take a break in just a minute. Today is the mega march going on downtown for immigration reform and getting rid of all these anti-Muslim declarations and everything else. They're expecting about 100,000 people. The 2006 Mega March, there were about 500,000, biggest march ever in Dallas. Looking at Central Expressway right out our window, well, the traffic's moving now, but it hadn't been for a couple of hours. And the march is supposed to start at 2.
Aaron's down there.
And I'm on my way down after the show. So.
Yeah, she took the train.
Well, you know, I have a reservation in the dining car.
Do you? Okay.
Of the Green Line. From near my house. So,
that's spectacular.
Yeah, but I am going to go down. I think I'm just going to go directly to City Hall and watch the march from there.
They're going to start at the Our Lady of the Guadalupe. Guadalupe.
The Cathedral Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yes, thank you.
God, Josh. The Jews here on this side of the table have to explain
the Jews got it right.
Church stuff to them.
And thank God you're here.
Right?
Ross and Pearl, and they're going to go from there to City Hall.
Right, and they're not announcing the route ahead of time just for security reasons, but if you were at any of the other mega marches, similar route.
Erin has her drum and her whistle.
Well, okay.
Right. And she said that maybe I shouldn't do the whistle, and I said, well, if you blow the whistle and somebody complains, and to say maybe it got hacked. Maybe your whistle got hacked.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink, and we will be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this. I'm on?
Yeah.
And the mic's on?
Is this
on? Oh, okay. We were just having a conversation here in the studio, not paying any attention. We'd rather that you just text Patty rather than use the KNON app if you have a question, because I don't know how to use it. I hope our station manager's not listening to me say that, but everybody who knows me knows I'm an idiot when it comes to anything mechanical what bothers me is the 911 system being down again this weekend, but the siren system was hacked. How the hell does that happen? Why are Dallas's sirens connected to the internet in any way that they can be hacked?
156 of them.
150. Well,
it's the city of Dallas.
It's the city of Dallas siren system. Why is it online at all in any way?
Right.
I think it's because they probably have some sort of automated thresholds for triggering the alarms remotely.
It should not be then connected into the internet.
But that's instead. It probably is, so that people can do it remotely. So that whoever's in charge of turning them on has to make a fundamental decision, do we turn them on or not? And if there's a weather event at 3:30 a.m. and no one's there, they need to be able to turn them on. And so
and
I think
we
that's
need
why
to get over this internet thing, that everything has to be through the internet, and things that need to be secure need to be on their own secure system, that in whatever way you dial into that, not the internet.
Yeah, because how did it operate prior to the internet? We still had sirens.
If somebody had to go turn them on.
Exactly. Well, sometimes, yeah, I'm quite
well,
with you,
sometimes
David.
We need to do something, because the 911 system got 800 calls between midnight and 12:15. The night I couldn't get through to 911, there were 400 calls that were backed up. This was 800 calls. Somebody could have died because, let me just call 911 and see what's going on.
That was so stupid of...
That, it needs to be illegal. We need to start fining people who are using 911 because, oh, I'm so worried, let me call 911. No, we need to start fining people. Then we'll be able to afford the new equipment that we need, that we can't afford to buy for whatever reason, that people are dying from.
When I lived in West Texas, it was illegal in town to call 911 for a non-emergency.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And if you
it
had
should
a,
be.
If you had a non-injury wreck that was cleared to the side and no one was in danger and no one was hurt, if you called 911 to report that, so that an officer would come out and write a report, that could be a fine.
Right.
I mean,
it
and that was
be.
A hefty fine. It was like $300.
It should be. It should be well publicized. It should be. But we need to educate people. 911, if you have a fire in your house, if you're in immediate danger and need the police, if you have a medical emergency that you need an ambulance to come to you, you need paramedics there immediately.
Right.
And that's it.
and like a gas leak. I mean, those kinds of things are serious things.
Oh, okay, gas leak. That is, you are in immediate danger. When something's going on and you're in immediate danger, or you need help from fire or police or paramedics, which are part of fire.
Right.
Now, how did I hear the sirens? And I live in Garland.
I have no idea.
Because you're next to the city of Dallas.
Well,
they're distributed across the entire city.
There are 156 sirens. That surprised me. I thought there were hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. But for 156 sirens to reach 300 square miles of Dallas is kind of interesting. Part of it is we have no topography particularly. So, it's not like there are hills that'll block it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was surprised it's just 156. You know, and Patty, during the break you were saying that, well, it went off and then it went back on again because the hackers hacked into the system and restarted them 12 times.
Wow.
And the way they fixed it was they turned it off. They turned the system off.
The whole system off.
They turned the system off so that if there was a dangerous situation, an emergency, we would not have gotten the siren warning at all. Mm.
And it's striking to me, because a lot of people were concerned. Their only concern was that we had just, bombed Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps
that still doesn't give you a right or a reason to call 911. Turn on your damn TV.
But that thing was there for 30 minutes.
Call a TV station, a news station.
Right.
Call somebody. Not 911. You don't have an emergency.
I think the most effective form of communication at that time was Twitter. You know, at least the Dallas Office of Emergency Management and TV stations were saying, we don't know what it is. The sirens are going off. There's no weather event. At least they were communicating. The TV stations weren't quite up to par yet, but
I mean, yeah, you have to get through to somebody. There's nobody at City Hall at midnight.
Right.
So I understand the problem with getting through, but you don't have an emergency that you need to call 911 to find out, gee, how is this noise going to affect me? Sorry it bothered you.
Well, like on Nextdoor. I mean, a lot of people who live in the city are on Nextdoor because it's a community neighborhood thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people on Nextdoor were going, what are the sirens? They're not stopping. Then have one person call 911 maybe, not 20 of you.
I didn't know what they were either. It woke me up. I literally went outside and looked. It's like, okay, the weather seems fine. We checked the news. Didn't see anything. I went back to bed. Kept going off. But not once did I think I need to call 911 to find out what's going
on. You didn't have an emergency.
Exactly. It didn't even run across my mind.
And the reason, for anybody who doesn't know who's listening, why I'm so furious and passionate about that is that my husband died while I was trying to get through to 911.
Exactly.
It's just a little over a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking for sympathy on it. I'm not telling you that way. But it's why I'm furious about this. And when I see people misusing 911, because that was the problem, there were 400 calls that were backed up while I was trying to get through. And they were fake calls and T-Mobile dialing and redialing and antiquated equipment. I mean, everything, it was just a...
Yeah, so we had a completely non-functional 911 system, and then you have idiots calling in on it en masse.
That's 4,400 calls between 11:30 and 3 a.m. 4,400 calls. The 10 operators, or however many, they won't release numbers, but at the 911 office, couldn't take your call anyway.
Sure.
And then if you hung up, because, I just can't get through, they have to call you back.
Right.
And do you know how long it took them to get through to the real emergencies? People died because of your selfishness.
Right, right.
And that's what it is. It's selfishness.
That's what I didn't understand when I was living, when I moved from West Texas to here, to Dallas, when it was a high visibility crime, to call 911 when you didn't need 911. And truly need 911. And then we get here and everything's funneled through 911 because it affects some sort of federal grant. It's like they just routinely funnel it. Well, somebody had sliced my convertible top when I had a convertible. And so I called, I said, it's not an emergency. I called the non-emergency number. It's not an emergency.
Which is 311.
Right. It's done. I mean, there's nothing anybody can do right now. I just want to report it, so I have a police report for my insurance company. And they said, oh, you need to call 911. I'm like, that's insane. And I had a big argument with the woman. She said, that's what the city of Dallas does. And that's what they were doing in the 90s. I don't know about in the 2000s, but they were funneling everything.
311 takes those reports now. Or you can do them online now.
Right.
We definitely need a re-education or an education period to the public at large. What 911
I think
is
some
far.
People got it when I was on every news station.
But prior to that, you know, like Petty says, that was just a standard. You need the cops for whatever reason, how insignificant the situation is, mm-hmm. you go through 911. And most of us know that that's not what you do.
Right. Right, it's just insane that was even ever, a go-to mm-hmm. policy.
But it was well staffed at the time.
Right,
you weren't taking anything away from people who needed. Their staffing levels are much lower right now. They know that their staffing levels are low and that they need to fix them. And it takes months to train people. So especially right now, to have called 911 was the most selfish, self-centered, ridiculous thing because I hear a little bit of noise outside.
Right. And even the people who in the moment were probably suffering the most, and that's those with dogs who sing. If your dog was singing for a couple of hours, like I could relate. That's not a 911 qualifying call.
Do your dog sing?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mine does not, thank God.
Yeah, she holds one note. She doesn't kind of go all over the map. She hits a note and she holds it. But there were dogs in the neighborhood that weren't very good. Mm-hmm. But still not 911 worthy. Right.
Now, here's what bothers me about the sirens themselves. I didn't hear them, and I was up.
Really?
Now, we have double pane windows because we're on the glide path to Love Field to keep the noise out. Didn't hear it.
And you were idea.
Well, but you're in Richardson. No, you're in Richardson. No, you're in Dallas. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wow. See, and I work from home, and like every Wednesday at noon, they fire off that mm-hmm. thing to test it, and I'm like, you know, and I hear the woo from our dog, but other than that, it's you never really hear them unless it really is a weather thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I heard it loud and clear.
Again, I don't know. How far into Garland are you?
I am.
Are you on the other side, on the outside of 635?
Yes. Yeah. But I'm like bordered. I'm like right at that cross center, three places between Garland, Mesquite, and Dallas. I'm not far from Dallas at all.
So there might be one.
It must be because again, I heard it loud and clear,
real close to you. Yeah. Because, like I said, I didn't hear one, and you would think in that area there should have been one loud.
Actually, mileage wise, I'm really not that far from Patty.
Right.
Yeah.
You probably aren't.
No.
Not that that's where you are.
Yeah, because I have a friend that lives, I think, a street or two over from you.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
One other thing before we go. The Trump administration this week, the attack on Syria.
What are you
thinking about it?
I don't know. It got a lot of bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying that was necessary. I don't know, but we kind of predicted this.
It didn't hit anything, though.
It didn't.
If you're gonna take off and retaliate for, horrendous, absolutely,
it was
inhumane treatment of civilians with sarin gas. I mean, it's just awful. The chemical warfare. But if you're gonna retaliate, do something useful. They didn't. I mean, Syrian planes were taking off from those runways. You know, like yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't. What they hit apparently were anywhere from 5 to 22 archaic, obsolete airplanes that aren't even used anymore by the Syrian Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why not bomb the runway so they can't take off from that airfield anymore? How can you miss a runway? You know, when there's three of them. You know, 59 missiles and not one of them hit the runway?
And I'm not going to second guess the military operation. Here's where the whole thing bothered me. Didn't bother me that they were attacking. This was apparently an Obama administration plan that was already in place the Obama administration, for whatever reason, at whatever time, did not do
execute it.
And I'm not saying good because it was an Obama plan, but so it was a thought-out plan of some sort. It's that one day Trump is saying, no, we can live with Bashar Assad. The next day he's bombing the country. He's tweeting about it. His thinking is what bothers me.
Right.
He's erratic.
Well, and also, why is it, you know, you're so, you know, pissed off about what happened over there, and it, like Patty said, it's horrendous. Now you develop the conscience for these children over there who are dying in a chemical warfare, but these same kids you don't want to come over to our country.
That's the big burn right there.
That's like, I don't understand what...
They're not... Yeah. I feel so sorry for them, but gosh, they can't come here. Not in my backyard.
You can't come over here. But now I'm so upset that I'm going to use our weapons
to bomb. And that's part of what I'm talking about. The policy seems to be erratic. It's not that you don't want to surprise somebody that you consider our enemy, but he hasn't gained the confidence and trust of most people in this country.
And he didn't go to Congress. He had a tweet from 2013 that said, Obama can't do anything in Syria without going to Congress first. He's acting illegally.
Right.
You know, it's an illegal act of war.
And it actually was not illegal what he did. I think he does need Congress's support because he doesn't have the country's support, and he doesn't like that very much, but he doesn't. And it would be much more solid if he did have Congress's support. But it's just his erratic, almost irrational thinking. You know, and I'm not questioning, did this upset him when he saw dead children? It does. He's a father. I'm not at all questioning how much he loves his kids. I bet he does.
But it was a Kim Jong-un move.
But it just kind of scares me a little bit.
Yeah,
his being in charge of this. One good thing, Bannon was removed from the National Security Council this week.
And he's losing that battle between him and Jared Kushner.
Saturday Night Live had a great line about that last night. This time he probably can blame the Jews.
We haven't recorded, we haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, but that was on Weekend Update. We're about out of time. I have one more Barry Manilow song for us to go out on.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Go out? I thought we were coming out.
We're going to play This Guy's in Love with You by Barry Manilow.